First of all, could you give us a very brief description of the situation in the prime minister election in the UK?
Sure, yes. So for the past couple of weeks, since the resignation of the previous Prime Minister Boris Johnson, there's been a leadership contest among the Conservative Party, which is the ruling party. They started off with, I think it was around 10 candidates, but they've been whittled down to two over the past few weeks after a series of debates and votes. And as things stand, we're now between Liz Truss, who was the Foreign Secretary under Boris Johnson, and Rishi Sunak, who was the Chancellor under Boris Johnson until he resigned, some would say precipitating the new need for a new leader.
The two candidates may have other policy differences, but for our viewers, they may care about their China policy differences the most. Could you summarize their differences for us?
In terms of China policy, I think it's safe to say that Liz Truss has, for slightly longer, tended to position herself as being tough on China. And I think that's seen in some of the support she's getting, some of the more hawkish or some of the more robust MPs when it comes to relations with China have backed her, including Ian Duncan-Smith and Tom Tugendhat. She has made several quite good interventions as Foreign Secretary. Only this year, she mentioned Tibet at the UN Human Rights Council in March. And then she backed a statement later on in the year, in June, criticising abuses under CCP rule, which again included Tibet. She has pledged in these debates to crack down on Chinese-owned companies in the UK. So the one that's come up most in discussions is TikTok. And in terms of her foreign policy, she's talked about forming a stronger alliance between Commonwealth countries, economic and political ties, which she says she hopes would counter Chinese influence. On the other hand, you have Rishi Sunak, who, as Chancellor, did pursue economic ties with China. He didn't use some of the stronger language that Liz Truss has been using over the years. So allies of Liz Truss and Truss herself is used as a means of attack against Rishi Sunak, pointing out that even recently, as early as this year, he was trying to pursue relations with Beijing in terms of trade. There's reports of Sunak seeking a reset in terms of the UK's relations with China to boost trade. Sunak's been very aware of those criticisms, and so there's almost this tonal whiplash in him announcing last week this raft of policies online, which was prefaced with the statement that China is now the number one threat to the UK and that he would face down China. And yet, outlined a series of policies which included closing down Confucius institutes in the UK. Sunak also suggested forming an international alliance against cyber threats emanating from China, countering industrial espionage, and also countering the Chinese acquisition of British tech firms. He also went on the offensive by accusing Liz Truss of rolling out the red carpet to the CCP when she was Foreign Secretary. So I think you can say that Liz Truss has historically been the slightly tougher person on China, although it is worth mentioning that to some members, even of her own party, that toughness has occasionally strayed into quite maverick declarations. There was one earlier this year about the need to arm Taiwan, which whatever you think of that, certainly panicked several members of her own party and led to calls for her to rein it in. Sunak seems to be a bit later to the game in terms of pointing out the threats posed by the CCP in the UK.
Has the UK government declared what happens in Xinjiang genocide? What about for Hong Kongers?
So the UK is often followed the US when it comes to foreign policy. And I think as you've seen a toughening in stance by the US, so you have with the UK, and MPs and senators in the US have worked closely on that. Regarding the question of genocide, the UK government has not, the UK Parliament has. The stance of successive foreign ministers in the UK is that it's not for them to declare whether something's a genocide. That's up to an international court. Whether or not that's a good stance, that's one that successive foreign ministers have stuck to. Parliament did, I believe it was last year, do a vote on this matter, and they did vote in favour of recognising it as a genocide, which it's not the government, but it's still a huge breakthrough. And in that sense, they followed the lead of, I think, the US and Canada. And I think the parliament in the Netherlands at that point had also made that vote. The idea that this golden era of relations is over. And that includes, for example, the UK, along with the EU, US and Canada, at the start of last year, imposing sanctions on several high-ranking, not top-ranking, but quite high-ranking Chinese officials who were culpable for human rights violations against the Uyghur people, suspending military training with the Hong Kong police, and announcing a ban on the use of Huawei's 5G network, which they did by citing security concerns.
How about for Tibetans? What about Ms. Truss and Mr. Sunak's position on the Tibetan issue?
I think in the recent debates, it was quite, it was a source of some dismay that Tibet wasn't mentioned. It's something that's happened a few times in recent years, and it's directly connected to the fact that the CCP, as stated policy, has made sure that Tibet is closed off from the world, that information cannot escape, that refugees cannot escape, and we hear very little about what takes place there, even though it's still, I would say, associated with anyone who knows anything, with vicious, widespread, long-standing human rights abuses and an occupation. The only statements that we've got from leadership candidates that I'm aware of are not from the debates, they're from Liz Truss's work as foreign secretary, where she has raised Tibet, even if it's only a sentence in a statement, in statements at the UN Human Rights Council. I think it's good that Tibet is at the very least being mentioned. What we would like to see are some more concrete proposals that would directly help the people of Tibet, so that we're not just talking about very important security concerns in the UK and talking about things like industrial espionage. We're also talking about what impactful human rights commitments can we make to the people of Tibet. And I think that needs to be things like expanding the sanctions. So I think it's already four Chinese officials that have been sanctioned, but there's some glaring absences. Chen Chuanguo, the former party secretary of the area of Tibet, governed as the Tibet Autonomous Region, implemented a range of horrendous human rights abuses there, really laid the foundations for the network of surveillance that still exists in Tibet, and means that Tibetans do not have that lifeline to the wider world to talk about human rights abuses. If they do, they get arrested. They're living under constant monitoring. Chen Chuanguo did that so successfully in the CCP's eyes that he was then given the position of party secretary of the Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous Region, what Uyghur people recognize as their homeland of East Turkestan, where he replicated many of those abuses on an even bigger scale because it's got significantly bigger population. He is not currently subject to sanctions in the UK. He could be, and I think it would send a very strong signal, and it'd be a principled thing to do, a way of punishing someone who has committed very real crimes. I think both candidates should be talking, since, you know, they do mention Chinese influence in the UK, about banning companies such as Hikvision, which is a Chinese company affiliated with the Chinese government, whose CCTV cameras are used in councils, several other UK public bodies, and many private institutions all around the UK, despite huge security concerns, and despite the fact that these cameras are also used in Tibet and in the Uyghur region directly to repress the people there. They're used in prisons and detention centres. So I would like to see both candidates commit to banning hike fishing from the UK. We would also like to see an end to the Chinese government repressing Tibet's culture, its way of life and its religion. And one tangible way that they can do that is with regards to the succession of the Dalai Lama, which is an issue of enormous importance to Tibetans. And it's something that the Chinese government is very blatantly and shamelessly trying to co-opt. The Chinese government has stated that when the time comes to identify the next Dalai Lama, the next spiritual leader of Tibet, the next, you know, most significant individual in Tibetan Buddhism, that it will be them that does it rather than the Tibetan people. That will be a decision that will be widely rejected by Tibetans, but it's a direct attack on their freedom of religion. And it's also something that could have the effect of sowing confusion among international governments and Buddhists around the world. The current Dalai Lama has been a vocal advocate for human rights in Tibet and for peace in Tibet. Were he to be succeeded by a Beijing-appointed Dalai Lama, another lifeline that Tibetans have to the wider world would be cut off. The US government has already introduced legislation saying that if there is any interference by Chinese officials in the succession of the Dalai Lama, that those individuals would be subject to sanctions. So the UK government would not be sticking its neck out were it to replicate this policy. In fact, it would probably be seen as a leader and an example for other governments to follow, which I think is probably where both Liz Truss and Rishi Sunak would rather position themselves on China these days. Were they to make commitments like this, I think they'd be doing a big service to human rights in Tibet. And I think that those policies would be welcomed and appreciated